the more you have to embrace technology. You can't waste training days. You've got to know when you can recover and what enough recovery is. You've got to know, you know, how many workouts you can do, whether or not you need to do 10 intervals or 8 intervals, those types of things. That becomes key.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you for joining me for the latest episode of the Run to the Top podcast brought to you by runnersconnect.net. So last week we talked to Ed Whitlock, who is the 85-year-old Masters runner who is destroying all kinds of world records week after week, including a 1:50 half marathon this past April and a 6:38 in the 1500 just a few weeks ago. So I know most of you listening love your stats. You love analysing the data post-run, and you love to see how you're actually improving over time. Even if you're physically unable to run a PR as your body is slowing down, it's always great to see how we are progressing and how we move through a season. But what if I told you that there's a new running gadget in town, one that could change the running world forever? My guest today believes this is a gadget that will make every world record there is fall. Power meters. Yep, like the cyclists use. Well, now there are power meters for running, and they are revolutionizing the way the top level runners are looking at their training. Many of the Rio athletes actually use them to build up during their training to the big event. But it isn't just for elite runners. They can actually help every runner, and we can find out exactly where we break down and use that information to help us figure out what we need to work on moving forward. Sounds pretty good, right? This is just the beginning. You're going to get a glimpse into the future with this. These power meters are so new to the running world. There isn't really that much data on them yet, but they are really looking promising, and the potential for them is, well, it's unlimited, really. It's really exciting. So if you're ready to learn more, after a word from our sponsor, we will get right to it. If you're a regular listener, by now you know who sponsors this podcast. Jabra, of course, with their wireless, sweat-proof, weatherproof sports earbud that I absolutely love. Remember, you can enter to win a free set every month at jabra.com/runnersconnect. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Jim.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you on, and something about an absolutely brand new topic within the world of running that I'm sure many people are excited to hear more, especially the kind of listeners I know we have. But first, I want to say, you know, you're a former professional triathlete, and, you know, you were very successful in your career. But did you always kind of have this question, being a triathlete who obviously knew it from the cycling end, of why runners didn't have the same tools as cyclists, you know, and why they didn't go out and find a solution? Or did you kind of hear about power meters afterwards and kind of think, how can I apply this to running? How did it come about?
It definitely came about through my days as a triathlete, where I really started to think about the possibilities. And in fact, I want to say in 2011, I wrote on my blog that once we got power meters in runner, like in shoes, I said, that it was going to change, it would change sport. Like every world record would fall in track and field, from the sprints to the throws to the marathon. And that, you know, once we were able to collect data and really see where our training practices and theories were successful, and even our technical things, you know, a long jumper or a high jumper, how deep of a penultimate step do they need before they jump over the bar? You know, where is the best run distance, and how out for a marker for a pole vaulter and things, and how should they adjust it as they take more jumps? You know, and when you can start having data to kind of back that stuff up, it becomes pretty incredible. And I think it's going to probably even change sport, like in hockey. How does a coach know when to change the line of players that are out there? They go on intervals now on time, but what if you recognized that this line didn't work as hard as that last one, so they can stay out there longer and give the other ones the longer breath and recovery? So it was kind of odd. I wrote about that, and then, you know, a few years later, here I was being contacted like, hey, this product is here. So, and we'd like you to write about it. So it was kind of give myself a pat on the back for being a soothsayer, I guess. But, it probably was inevitable. I mean, yeah. With the success that we've seen in cycling and triathlon with, power data, it's really changed the game. So it certainly was likely that it was going to happen for other elite sport.
Absolutely. And it's been really interesting to read through it and see, you know, kind of almost change the way I was even looking at things. You know, like, you know, we talked about, we're often talking about this, you know, famous 2-hour marathon. Can anyone do it? And, you know, when you think about it in terms of the 4-minute mile, could that be done? We didn't think so, but it is. And you kind of talked about a belief that, you know, a particular performance is impossible or the prospect is too far away for us to see in our lifetime. But you talked about how it was the viewpoint that only looks at the final result rather than the process of getting there. So can you kind of explain what you meant by that? Just because I found that part of the book so interesting. So maybe other people would listen.
Sure. Sure. Well, I think everybody looks at the... In triathlon, it's the best way to think about it is, and to use this perspective, is when you hear about an Ironman distance and someone says, well, you're going to swim 2.4 miles, you're going to bike 112 miles, and then you're going to go run a marathon after that. Everybody's like, that's ridiculous. How in the world would you do that? Why would you do that? Well, that's because people are looking at the totality of the distance rather than just break it up one step at a time, you know? Writing a book is very much you can't even begin to think about the final book and how many pages you're going to end up making this book. You have to take it one day at a time, one paragraph at a time, one sentence at a time, and over time it just becomes this, you know, this product or this result if you look at it from a training perspective. And really, we have very little data and information about the quality of training that we do in running. Running is so hard to measure because we all run on different courses. We run at different elevations. We run in different conditions. We run just our training history. So many different things. Well, now when you start to have data that gives you things that you can't really even see with your own eyes, it really helps to make all those variables much more clear. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying, I don't just say, oh, well, get a power meter and you'll set the world record. Mm-hmm. But I do talk about the fact that this data, along with the best coaches who begin to understand it, really be, you know, it's like the chefs in the kitchen who make the newest and best dishes that, you know, spark your taste buds like you've never had done. It's like, well, they just worked at it. And mm-hmm. So these coaches that can combine with this data and the science behind it, I think will greatly influence the training results. Mm-hmm. Or the training response of athletes and our top athletes. So you take our top athletes with our best coaches and the best data available, and the processes get refined and much more efficient and effective. So
yeah,
that's kind of what I was talking about.
So have you already started to see that with some of the top coaches, like kind of adopting this, I should say, or is it kind of now it's still a case of kind trying to show people that this is actually going to be helpful for runners?
Well, we're collecting data on a number of top athletes, even in Rio. I know that a number of our triathletes in Rio will be wearing a run power meter. We'll be collecting some data on that. How many distance runners will be doing it? I'm not fully aware of that. I think running as a whole is a very traditional type of culture that they don't necessarily like new techie things unless it's a $600 Garmin watch or something. but it's funny. I think that we're still trying to get people to understand the value of the data, but it is hard because it's a new line of thinking. Mm-hmm. It's not just more watts is better. It's not that, you know, just more, it's more pace is better, although, or more speed. Although I do think that is still critical, but, really it's all goals based. And in running, we have a lot of different goals. We have people that are trying to run a fast 5K or run a fast time on a track, or those that are trying to run a marathon, or even now we see ultra marathons and trail running really increasing. So the goals of what they want to do with that data and what metrics they and thresholds they want to hit are even different among those populations. So we're still gathering up that data to know, you know, what values apply to what goals. Mm-hmm. So it's still, we're still very much on the revolutionary front end of this, but I think, you know, if you look at cycling and how power meters just really just blew up in cycling, you know, they came out in like the 80s, but by the late 2000s, you know, now you watch the Tour de France, there isn't a team that won't use it. Yeah. Every team will, but 10 years before that, there were still teams that were like, we don't really believe in it. And then they started realizing, oh my goodness. You know, when the teams that really embrace it, Team Sky came along, mm-hmm. and they were absolutely on tech and science and everything, and they started winning the Tour a bunch, and everybody's kind of been left behind. So it's certainly looking like a similar trajectory for running. At some point, it will get adopted.
Yeah, and so there you go. Anyone listening right now, do you want to be one of the early adopters who kind of jump on it now and get ahead? Or would you rather be one of those people saying, oh, I knew about it, but I didn't do it? So we're giving you a bit of an insight here into the future. And so I want to go into the, you know, more of the explaining what it is in a second. But as you mentioned about the world records and them dropping, can I get a prediction here from you from when you feel like the 2-hour marathon will go?
Oh, sure. I think by 2024.
Okay.
I think, right. You know, we're 8 years away.
All right. We'll see where you fall. Come back to you in 8 years. okay, great. All right. So then let's go back to the very basics, the simplest terms. You want to explain what a power meter is and kind of how it works with running?
Sure. So a power meter is simply, it's a work rate. Well, power is a work rate, rather, and a power meter tells you what your work rate is. So work is just force times distance. You apply a force, you move a certain distance, you've accomplished work. So you put that over time, and that's your work rate. How much work are you doing over time? So that's what power gives us. It's basically the how hard you press into the ground. So basically, you're almost like the force you apply through your stride, through your foot into the ground, and your cadence in a lot of ways. So that's kind of the simplest way to look at it. Right now, it's measured in two different ways. It's measured from below the foot with a sensor. That's a company called RPM Squared. And what that does is it literally has sensors in an insole that you place in your shoe, and it measures how hard you press into the ground and your cadence. The other one is a sensor that you can wear on your body, and that's by a company called Stryd, STRYD. Their product is more of a, it uses your mass, and it has all these sensors that knows how far you move through space and in what direction. And so based upon that, it can basically measure work and knows, okay, you went a certain distance, based upon your mass at this speed, here's what it would have to be. The force would have to be. So it knows speed, it can calculate force, and that gives you your power. So it's the real thing is when we begin to look at it is now because of this, you can actually measure intensity a lot more because you can really begin to measure what is the force you're actually applying. What is, you know, relative to a work rate that your body has proven that it can sustain. So it becomes much more effective at measuring intensity than just pace alone, mm-hmm. because pace alone might, you know, you might go uphill, you might go downhill, you might run in the sand, you might something, you know, there's certainly all sorts of variables. So this is much more effective at that.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about, you know, kind of unveiling a truth about if we are pretty bad at pacing. What does it show? What does the power meter show about if you are, you know, if you do tend to go out a little bit too fast, or if you aren't as great at pacing as others?
Well, yeah. So athletes, athletes may look at pace and think, well, my pace slowed down as I went. But really, what power is able to do is there's three types of power. There's horizontal power, which is us moving forward. There's vertical power, us moving up and down. And then there's lateral power, so side-to-side movements. In running, you have to have vertical power. You have to move up and down. If you don't lift yourself off the ground, you're not running. So there is a lift that's required. But I think a lot of us have heard of the term vertical oscillation, or a high head bounce. You know, how high do you move up and down? Well, I can have zero horizontal power, and I can have very high vertical power. And that's just me jumping up and down. So, but I can't have zero vertical power and high horizontal power for running. So it's this balance. So what you really begin to see is as an athlete's power actually increases, their watts, they're actually becoming generally, I find, more inefficient. So it's about the real concept is speed per watt. What is the speed you can hold for the watts that you produce? So if I'm running, just because I have higher power than the athlete next to me does not mean I'm running faster or as efficient. That's really the key that this tool can do to give us insight in terms of distance running. If we want to look at it. Now, there comes a point for every athlete, they want to gain more for the watts that they're producing. That's for sure. But certainly in distance running, especially longer distance, it's about, okay, can we finally have a tool that can measure how efficient we are as a runner. Are we able to keep our watts low while we run? And what tends to happen is athletes who are poor in pacing, their watts greatly increase, especially relative to the speed that they're running at as they run. And so it really does a great job of getting athletes to show how hard they had to work just to maintain whatever pace they were actually running. And from a training response time, if you can begin, or pacing strategy, you can begin to see, well, what if we push that breakdown out, that greater production of watts relative to a pace? What if we were able to extend that out further in time before that happens? Now it becomes a great pacing tool for athletes.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I mean, I haven't used a power meter myself, but since making some changes to my running form to increase my power through various, strength training, through working on, running drills, through all kinds of different things to increase my power, I have definitely noticed the efficiency in a marathon. The breakdown, like you mentioned, is further along significantly than it used to be. So, even without the power meter, that definitely makes sense. And then would you say that this becomes more beneficial for people who have a coach, have that kind of outside perspective watching them? Or would you say the people who maybe do not have a coach, this is going to be, a critical tool for them? Because if you don't want to pay for a coach, you can't afford a coach. If you have this power meter, you can kind of almost get the feedback that's not just subjective that you feel, but it's actually something you can use.
Well, that's
a good question. I mean, obviously you want everyone to use it.
I'm very open and honest in the book that we're still learning a lot.
Yeah.
I see the potential in this. What if I could give you, what if you went out on a run and you think, okay, well, I feel pretty good, but tomorrow, should I go hard or should I not go hard? If today's my recovery, how do I know that I've recovered enough? Well, what if there's a certain speed per watt value that you have okay, I'm really tired and I need another day of recovery, or no, I'm good to go. I've recovered pretty well from this workout. I'm ready to push hard the next day or change the training schedule. It's like now you're getting actual, objective feedback that tells you how well you're recovering, how well the body is performing in terms of, making training decisions and understanding your recovery. If you can have that and really figure that out, then this becomes an incredibly powerful tool. Sorry for the pun there, but it really is an amazing thing. Now, how easy is it to find that value? Well, that's where I can tell you I'm one of the few guys in the world that really knows a lot, and there's still so much I don't know. So it's, I think athletes who are really into data and numbers and want to go further and deeper on can begin to use this. I have all my athletes using it, but to be truthful, I'm not, this is my first full year of really using it. I'm not even writing workouts according to power. We're recording the data and I'm looking at what the data tells me post-workout. And I'm trying to see, okay, well, does this challenge my thinking or does it agree with my thinking? Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, if I'm seeing a response and improvement in the athlete, what does the power data tell me? If I'm seeing a lack of improvement in an athlete, what does the power data tell me? So I start looking for markers, because then I think an athlete can individually go back and say, wow, well, my speed per watt really changed here. And that coincided with when I got injured in my hamstring or my Achilles. And boy, I must have, maybe I started favoring it. It really changed a week out before. And so I noticed I was favoring this. So it really, you know, numbers by themselves don't give you much. Numbers with numbers that are actually there's context to them really become the tool for a runner. Now, some athletes will be able to handle that and know the context of the data very well by themselves, and some of us are just robots who go out and run and don't think about anything. So we need somebody that can look at it and say, hey, did you notice this? Oh yeah, I did notice that now that you mention it. Mm-hmm. So I think it depends on the type of athlete you are and runner you are. So, but the potential is there, but I don't know that any athlete can just pick up this tool and we can say, here are the norms, and as long as you stay in these values, you're good. We don't know that. Yeah. That's, you know, it's still such new technology and so exciting. Believe it or not, there were a lot of things I left out of the book because I just can't prove them yet. And the last thing I want to do is write a book where everybody came back and said, oh, you're really dumb. You didn't know what you were talking about in this one section. And now it ruins the whole credibility of everything I wrote.
So all the stuff that is in there, you really have thought about. And that's something good for us to, you know, pay attention to, that this is just the beginning. And then just before I forget, if someone does purchase a power meter, they do start using it. Are you still kind of looking for data? Like, do you want people to kind of submit it? Or is this, only small select groups of, you know, carefully, people that you're working with, or maybe your athletes that know how to use it in a special way? Are those the kind of people you're, you know, collecting the data from?
Well, again, I think everything's going to need context. Mm-hmm. If someone just sends me one power file from a run, it doesn't really do me much.
Yeah.
That's like somebody sending me a pace. Well, you know, here's my GPS pace file from my workout. Mm-hmm. Tell me if I'm ready to do this performance. It's like, I'd never be able to do it. So I think it's really like a case study. You're an athlete that has a certain goal for a time, and you collect data over time and look at it and say, wow, you know, here's where I got injured. Here's where, well, here was my file as well. I think athletes can do their own case studies and write about it. We're seeing a lot of that just because it really is so different. So many athletes with different goals. Mm-hmm. I certainly would not want to apply marathon standards to half marathon athletes. Mm-hmm. So there's still a lot of learning to do. Like I say, we'll be looking at some triathletes in Rio.
Yeah.
That come off the bike. You know, that's entirely different. They're running a 10K off a bike and a swim. So certainly not the same. But I do offer athletes that have some interest and want to learn. I do certainly consult with them on occasion for a fee, but
okay.
Well, that's about the extent of what I do. But I am always anxious to read more about what athletes are using.
Okay, well, I will encourage anyone to, you will have my email by now, so I will get you, say, if you would like to, you know, submit yourself and kind of work with Jim, then you can email me and I will pass you along to him. So then, you know, one thing you wrote about in the book was about how using a heart rate monitor is like looking in a rearview mirror. So can you kind of explain to people why this is going to be better than using a heart rate monitor for your training?
Sure. Well, heart rate never responds instantaneously. It's always going to lag with effort. For example, an athlete can go into a 50-meter sprint, and by the time they hit the 50-meter sprint, the heart rate still hasn't even reached its peak. It's going to continue to climb, even though you're standing still or hunched over. So heart rate is always going to lag behind. Even in an effort, the heart's going to end up having to work harder and beat harder at any given effort as it goes, as it extends over time, in order to deliver more oxygen to the muscles to continue at the same effort. So heart rate is very suspect in as a way to measure intensity for runners. But power is pretty much instantaneous. Here's the force you just produced on that step, or that you're averaging in over this second, or whatever duration you're really focused on. So power is much more instantaneous, and therefore now you can actually measure intensity a lot better.
Yep.
And again, as you measure intensity, now you measure training stress. As you measure training stress, now you begin to understand what you can handle. What training stress do you begin to realize? Oh man, I'm cooked now. This was too much. Or you can even begin to look at your own training tendencies. If you're coaching yourself, or if you're a general coach of others, you can look at how dense are your weeks. Maybe you need to back off on your weeks. How many hard workouts you put in a week for an athlete of a certain goal level or distance. So that I think is the real key. Yes, power is great in the sense of the things we can learn from it. In the moment, and even potentially as a great pacing tool for athletes. But what I think really it helps us do is it helps us measure intensity better than we've ever been able to measure it. Mm-hmm. And now athletes can step back, and coaches, and look at the big picture, the totality of what are we actually doing in our training? What stimulus are we giving to the athletes? And how do we know it's the right stimulus? How much stimulus can they tolerate before there's a breakdown? Because if you learn that one season, well, now you can come back the next season and begin to adjust it. Right now the common way we measure intensity is, well, how many miles a week did you run, and what was the pace? All with a number of cloudy variables in there that we really can't take into account. So I think the intensity measurement is really the best part of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Very, very helpful explanation there, and really makes a lot of sense. But now I want to ask you the one question which I'm sure some of our listeners are thinking about, which is for runners who say, there's too much technology, I want to get away from the simple joy of just running. I'm sure you've had this question over and over. What would you like to say to those people who, think, I don't want this, I just want to run by feel, running is simple, I want to keep it simple? Any thoughts about that?
Oh, I have no problem with that. I think that's a fine approach. What I do think, though, is the higher your goals get as an athlete, the more you have to embrace technology. You can't waste training days. You've got to know when you can recover and what enough recovery is. You've got to know, how many workouts you can do, whether or not you need to do 10 intervals or 8 intervals, those types of things. That becomes key. Now, if your goal is, hey, I just want to go and finish and run with my friends and finish with a smile on my face and live a healthy lifestyle, then yeah, I don't think a power meter is for you. If your goal is, no, I want to qualify for Boston, well, that's not easy to do. Now you're trying to step up and be more competitive, and certainly athletes can say, well, I don't want technology. Well, I would ask those athletes, do you use an iPhone? Do you have a smartphone? Mm-hmm. Do you have a job where you don't use technology at all? How many computers do you have in your home? It's like everything about what we do is, our daily lives leverages technology to make our daily lives more enjoyable, more effective, more efficient. So I certainly think that there's reason to believe that technology can do the same in our running, mm-hmm. Especially if we have high goals.
Yeah, definitely. Great. Yep. And that's a really interesting thing about even this podcast. We wouldn't have it if it wasn't for technology. So you're listening right now. Okay, so let's say, you know, someone is interested, I want to buy a power meter, I want to try this out. Is there a most reliable brand? You know, the two you talked about earlier, which of those is preferable? What thoughts do you have on the types of power meters available?
Well, I get this question a lot. People email me a lot. Hey, which one should I buy? And which one do you like better? And my statement has always been, whichever one's willing to pay me the most to say they're the best. kind of like athletes do with shoe companies. So I really try to maintain a neutral position, okay. Especially because you know the technology is new, and I think that both have their advantages. RPM squared measures directly. Whereas Stride basically estimates or calculates it based upon certain variables. So okay. If you're a direct measurement person, you might like the insole. If you're not that way and you don't want anything in your shoe, then maybe you don't want that one. Stride is the cheaper of the two, around $200. And I cannot remember what the price is for RPM squared. I want to say it's somewhere around the $400, $500 range.
Okay.
So it really is up to the athlete and their budget. But I can tell you it's cheaper than most of your smartwatches now that people are wearing. So certainly the cost is not a prohibitor, I think, for most people, which ironically, that was one of the big challenges with cycling. So cycling power meters were very expensive when they first came out. Mm-hmm. You know, usually for a long time, it took a while to get one that was under $1,000 to $2,000. Mm-hmm. So as that market grew and there were new models came out, new ways to measure power came out on bicycles, the cost has come down to like $500 for a decent one now. So, and plenty of models under $1,000. So that really changed in cycling. So we're not facing that hurdle if we were in cycling. So I do expect that, you know, that's going to help this market and this segment take off because of what it is and the relatively cheaper cost. So those are the two, Stride and RPM squared. And I would just encourage athletes to kind of look at it and see which one kind of fits their needs and their preferences.
Okay. And I'll put links to those in the show notes, which I will mention now at runnersconnect.net/RC125. So once someone purchases one, you did say that, you know, they should use it for easy running for the first few weeks, but not to look at the data. So do you want to explain why that is and why people should start with easy running first rather than measuring all kinds of workouts?
Well, I think they can still use it in hard runs. I think that's fine. I think early on, there's no context to the data. It's just a number. It would be kind of like the first time you looked at heart rate. Like, is that high? I don't know if that's high. Is that good? Mm-hmm. Am I going hard enough? Am I going too hard? It's like, you don't know. So I think it's just important for athletes to gather some data, kind of look, and then afterwards kind of come back and look and say, oh, wow, look at that. My power really went up as my pace got slower. Or, hey, my power went up on the uphills. It went down on the downhills. You know, just really begin to learn and understand what the context of the data is rather than what the specific numbers are and what they mean. I think it's so early when you first get it that to make any inferences on the data without any real knowledge of baselines is probably a mistake.
Mm-hmm. And then with regards to the same kind of along the same lines, you said that, you know, there isn't really a good watt per kilogram that people can, you know, shoot for and say this is good. Do you want to explain why that is?
Sure. So the key concept in cycling is the watt per kilo of an athlete, which measures what's the work rate they can do relative to their size or their mass. So your Tour de France winners tend to be the guys who can go up the hills the most, that they're the teeny guys that can produce the most watts. And that's how that works in cycling. When I started this book, I thought that would be one of the key metrics as well, watt per kilo. But what I found was it's not. It's speed per watt. What's the speed that an athlete can run at relative to the watts they produce? So for an athlete to really look at kilo, I think that's just one marker of what really attributes to their speed per watt. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you're a large mass individual, and the watts you produce, yes, that's probably going to affect your speed per watt. And you might be able to use watt per kilo to find kind of that sweet point of, oh, well, as soon as I get to this watt per kilo, my speed per watt jumps greatly. And so I think that's how athletes can do that. But yeah, that's one of the concepts in the book that I think athletes can look at and apply the numbers to themselves and really begin to look at those relationships.
Yeah. And the book does explain that very well. I know we've mentioned it a few times, but it is Run With Power, A Complete Guide to Power Meter for Running. So, I will put links in the show notes, obviously, for this. But then let's talk about something you talked about in the book, which was you did mention a general and a specific training phase and how this can be used to kind of really peak for your big races. And at Runners Connect, we are huge fans of this, and our training programs for athletes definitely get runners to go through both those phases, the base, we call it the base phase, and the specific phase. But you talked about a training season being like a journey. You know, you should schedule out for a year, have a few A races, and then the B and C races don't matter as much. So could you kind of explain your thinking with why you should plan out 1 year at a time and only pick a few A races?
Well, sure. I think when you have a few A races on your calendar, you're able to really spend your time training for them. When you start having 10 A races, like so many athletes want to taper for every race and make sure it's their best performance ever, you spend so much time resting and recovering that you never actually train. So that really becomes your challenge. With the book, where I kind of allow athletes or show athletes how to plan out their year, they're able to actually begin to understand when to look at their speed per watt relative to their race goals, so their race-specific paces. So if you can go out and hold a speed per watt at your goal pace on courses, training courses, or maybe on the course if it's in your hometown, for your goal event, well, now, and you're looking at that speed per watt improving as well as pace improving, well, now you know you're training effectively. Mm-hmm. Well, when do you want to do that? Generally, you want to do that phase. So the book really just helps athletes kind of understand when the metrics are most important, relative to their goals. And then, of course, the book also talks about the fact that we can measure intensity. You're able to taper down to a certain number, where we look at your what we call your chronic training load, your chronic training stress level. So if you keep your fitness up and you're able to dial down the intensity while maintaining fitness, and look at these markers relative to fitness, while you're able to reduce fatigue, well, then you know you're ready to go out and race and have a great event.
Yeah, and then just going into that a little bit more, you know, you talked about using this to know when you are ready to race. And so are you saying that this should be, you know, once people get used to using this is a great way to say, okay, I'm only going to race when I'm ready? Or is this just kind of a way of kind of building confidence in the few days before that, okay, I know I'm ready to go now?
Well, I think you hit on a key thing right there, confidence. Mm-hmm. I'm known as a data guy. And that's what people call me. Like, I'm a numbers guy. What people don't realize is, yeah, I'm a numbers guy, but only to use the numbers to make the athlete feel confident. Get them to see their performance. Get them to see their improvement. Every athlete that I know has a metric that they value. And some of them, it's weight. If when I reach X pounds or X mass, I know that I'm ready to race. When I go out and I do this one workout, maybe it's my neighborhood loop, when I can run it in this time, boy, I know I'm fit and ready to race. If I can go out and average, 60 seconds for 400s on 2 minutes rest for 8 400s, I know I'm ready to race. Well, there's some metric that every athlete has, a resting heart rate in the morning, something. When they hit it, they are confident and they know they're ready. And so I'm big on that. So finding whatever metric an athlete finds, like maybe it's their speed per watt at their race, at their race intensity. Maybe it's a certain workout, a tempo run, well, whatever it is. But once they kind of hit that metric and they know it, and their confidence is sky high, they come to the start line with confidence, then they're ready. Because I can tell you, if I can peer into an athlete's mind and hear what they're saying to themselves when they're on the start line, I can tell you how they're going to perform.
Mm-hmm.
Just based upon what they're saying to themselves. And that's what I use data for. Once I begin to understand what the athlete really values and how they're going to be best prepared mentally to race, to maximize their fitness, then we're golden. When we don't have that, it doesn't matter how fit I make them. They got to believe it, be confident.
Oh, I love that. And so, so true. And I hope a lot of people listening right now are kind of realizing that, you know, this is a huge part of having a coach or having someone working with you, is that they're able to kind of see and understand you and kind of know what buttons to push to help you feel confident. So hopefully this is kind of being a bit of a wake-up call for anyone out there who's thinking, oh, I'm just going to, you know, do it all myself. I don't need anyone else. It is very important to have other people and other tools to kind of help you do it. So what about racing? So in the specific part of the race themselves, how can runners use a power meter for that?
Well, again, I think everybody's got to, they've got to understand what their goal speed per watt is at their intensity. And then they've got to run some workouts and really feel like, okay, yes, I've tested this. I've proven it. Early on, like I said, even in myself, this is my first year, I'm not really writing workouts or devising race strategies for runners for any part of the running based upon watts. Now, there are athletes and people out there that I know that are, and I think that's fine and great. I'm still in that phase where I'm trying to learn more and use it post-race to analyze and see, mm-hmm. okay, how well did we perform? How well did what we did in training line up with what happened in the race? So I'm more on that, at least this, if you ask me next year, I could be on the other side and be like, no, I've proven it. I feel very good. Now I've seen these trends and I know that I've seen enough that I believe this. So to answer your question, athletes certainly do that. I don't do that right now, but I'm certainly working towards that.
Okay. Very good. Yeah. And I guess I kind of got away with the way that I worded that question, in that I was kind of asking you what you did end up talking about, even though I worded it badly, but you talked about like the analysis and, you know, how you can kind of analyze afterwards where the breakdown happens. So you can, you know, change your training moving forward to make sure that you can, you know, prolong that when that breakdown happens, or maybe make changes to your training so that you don't have that breakdown happen. So just if you could explain just a little bit more in that and how they can use it in that post-race analysis to, you know, change things as you move forward.
Well, sure. I think when you, like I said, looking at a taper number, you can even compare what we call training stress balance. If you use training peak software or some of their similar things, you can actually get it down to a number, and you can see like, well, okay, in this half marathon, my workouts were pretty similar going into both in terms of the quality of the workouts and what I ran pace wise. But at this one, I was at this number for a rest level going into it, whereas this one maybe wasn't so high. Well, how do the performances differ? You know, that's the thing about tapering. Everybody wants to look at, you know, everybody wants to maintain sharpness without losing fitness. And so I think you can really do that afterwards and start looking at, okay, how did I do there? You can also look to see, you know, and that can be pretty clear sometimes based upon how well the athlete is performing in speed per watt as they kind of go through the race. If their speed per watt is declining a lot, then as they're going, then it becomes a real question of, okay, let's look at the context. How well rested were we? How effective were our workouts in actually preparing us for that specific race pace or goal?
Mm-hmm. Okay, very helpful. Okay, well, after a quick word from our sponsor, I'm just going to have a few more questions for you with the final kick round.
Most of us are now in the middle of summer. That means the temperatures have soared and running becomes a little more difficult. We dream of those cool fall mornings and remind ourselves that those tough days now will pay off big time later, or so we hope. I find a distraction helps a lot, and Jabra Pulse is just what you need. The wireless sweatproof earbuds make it nice and easy to listen to podcasts or music through Bluetooth on those days we are on board the struggle bus. Runners Connect listeners can get exclusive offers and enter to win a free Jabra Pulse headset by signing up at jabra.com/runnersconnect. That's jabra.com/runnersconnect to start your journey, or buy the Jabra Pulse at your local Best Buy. Jabra, this is where it starts.
Okay, and I just have a few more questions for you in our final kick round. So I just want to begin with the greatest advice you've ever received.
Greatest advice I've ever received. Stay humble.
Stay humble. Very simple and very effective. okay, what is your favorite running book, or doesn't have to be a running book, or blog?
Well, my favorite blog is probably Ross Tucker. I wrote a book. Okay. I did a book, Triathlon Science, and Ross Tucker wrote a section of that book as an expert.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he's very knowledgeable.
And he's one of the best guys around. So I'm always interested. I always take time to read what he talks about. I think he's great. Of course, I in college, when I was a runner at the University of Nebraska, I read Once a Runner. It's still probably one of the best ones, but it's probably cliche on your show. People probably say that a lot.
Well, you say that, but I'd say Born to Run is probably picked about one every three interviews. So Once a Runner, wow, we do hear quite often, but definitely shadowed by Born to Run. So, which is fine by me, because we're good friends with Chris McDougall, so that works for me. okay, what would you like to tell a brand new runner?
Oh, consistency is the most important thing. I think, there's no workout I could ever ride as a coach that can make up for a lack of consistency.
Yep.
Consistency is most important.
Yep, absolutely. Very good advice. And actually, that's kind of similar to what I would tell a new runner. So I like that one. Okay, what would you eat before a race, either a triathlon or just a run or whatever?
You know, what's funny is when I was a runner, I could never eat before a race or even before a run. Mm-hmm. I needed at least 3-4 hours. Mm-hmm. And then when you got into triathlon, because if I would do that in running, I would feel so awful on my runs. And then as I became a triathlete, eating became so much more important because you're out there so much longer.
Yeah.
And I was a big paleo diet guy, very big on the paleo diet. So my breakfast or anything that I ate before was generally lean proteins, fruits, vegetables, those types of things.
So you say
stayed away from dairy.
Is that not the case anymore?
Oh, no. Now that I don't race and I retired from racing, I enjoy other things. Like, I enjoy beer. I enjoy Twinkies. My sweet tooth has gone away. So all those years on the paleo diet, my sweet tooth kind of went away. But I do enjoy certain bread things now and cheeses and stuff like that.
So. Well, you've earned it, so that's okay. and finally, I'm not sure I even need to ask this question, but favorite running product?
Well, certainly I would say run power meters are there too, but believe it or not, I'm going to say a bicycle.
Mm.
I'm going to say a bicycle because I think so. Let me tell you something. One of the things we've found in triathlon with our elite triathletes is that and I found this myself, they're better runners now than they were when they focused on running.
Yep.
And so I think, you know, so many people kind of scoff at it, but, you know, you can't go and do too many 3-hour runs in a week to develop your aerobic system. But you can go out and do plenty of 3-hour rides and work on your aerobic system. So a bicycle made me healthy. It made me love running more. It made me just appreciate it because it wasn't something that I had to do every day, but I still could, you know, I still had the fitness gains and things. So believe it or not, I'm going to say a bicycle.
No, I think that's great. And actually, once we end this interview, I'm about to go use my Elliptico downstairs because as people know who listen, I'm a huge cross-training fan. So I'm all with you for that. Awesome. But cross-training is definitely an important part of running well. So, okay, Jim, well, I want to thank you so much for your time today. It was really interesting to, you know, dive into the world of power meters, especially something that's, you know, so new and exciting. So I know a lot of our listeners are going to love this because a lot of people are definitely stats people and love the numbers. And I'm probably on the lower end of things when it comes to numbers, but I know a lot of you guys are really into it. So thank you for taking the time to explain it to us. And if anyone does want to get in touch with Jim, I will put you in touch with him. And I'll put a link to everything we've talked about today in the show notes at runnersconnect.net/RC125. So thank you so much, Jim.
Thanks for having me, Tina.
Phew. That was a lot to take in, but it really does get you thinking. And how incredible would it be to see all those world records come down even further? It's hard to imagine, especially at a time when our sport is shadowed by all these recent drug scandals. But maybe this can change things. Maybe it can make runners seek alternative ways to reach their potential and have an advantage, rather than using those illegal substances. You know, nice to think, huh? Remember, you can email me, tina@runnersconnect.net, or tweet at me, @TinaMuir. And I'd really love to hear from you about the guest or topic you would like to learn from, and especially whether you would like to hear a second podcast episode each week. I'm thinking about doing one on Wednesday and again on Friday, but I want to hear your thoughts on whether you would be able to listen to another one or if you're barely able to keep up with this one. So let me know your thoughts. I really, really do value your feedback. And those of you who have already emailed me in the past will know that already. So next week, we're going to be talking to Todd Williams of Run Safer, who is going to answer your questions and mine about runner safety and what we can do to avoid putting ourselves in danger, as well as what we can do if we do find ourselves in a situation that could put our lives at risk. You really do not want to miss this one. It is so important. So until next time, have a great week.